Okay, welcome back. And as we do every day, we try to bring you up to date, keep you up to speed on what's going on with this plandemic, this awful, horrible, planetary-wide destructive machine that they have turned loose after years and years of planning, both scientifically and geopolitically. A couple quick headlines. This one, though, let me scroll down to get this. We're now, this is no surprise, we're hearing now about what? The new strains, the dangerous, new, frightening, more deadly strains of the coronavirus, okay? One of them is the British strain. Another one is the South African strain. Here's what they're telling families in South Africa now. Because of the South African strain, they're telling families there in any testing area where the strain has been determined to exist, according to the government, they're told to think again before ever leaving home, even to buy food. Think about this. This is fear porn times 1,000. It's all fear-based, all of it. They're not doing anything that will help people understand scientifically what's going on. They're just dosing them over and over and over again with fear. All right, here are a couple of quick headlines for you. Now, this is another one that is very worrisome. If you know, and I think most of you do, the man who invented the PCR test, I think Kerry Mullis is his name, he's dead. He died a year ago. Young man, he shouldn't have died. I don't know what the cause of death was formally stated as being. I don't know if they did not. I don't know. But he died rather fortuitously just before this whole plandemic was rolled out. And as we know now, the PCR test has been completely discredited. It has nothing to do with determining any kind of clinical infection in anybody. It's not that kind of a test. Got a 94-95% false positive reading, and good luck. All right. Kerry Mullis died, the PCR test creator. Here's another one. The creator of the COVID-19 saliva test conveniently died under mysterious circumstances at age 51. I put this up yesterday. I'm rerunning it. We're going to put the headlines up just in a few minutes. But 51 years old, the creator of the COVID-19 saliva test mysteriously dies. There you go. Now, many have been wondering what the next pandemic, the next angle will be. Well, they're already showing their hand a little bit with these new, supposedly more deadly strains of the coronavirus. But there may be something entirely different, which would, to me, be more intelligent. Not another virus, something else. Candida auris, A-U-R-I-S. This may be the next one. Just remember, you heard it here, and maybe you've seen it elsewhere. The next plandemic, may be Candida auris. It's a fungus. It's not a virus, not a bacteria. All right, so just remember that. That's in headlines as well, which are going up shortly. Tony Fauci, the little thug, has flip-flopped again. Now he says there's no data to indicate that wearing multiple masks is beneficial. Right? They just do this. They're keeping people so mixed up and confused and off balance and under stress and fear-based. It's not funny. I've got that story up about the CO2 levels. I'll put another one up. Ted Brewer mentioned that last hour. Scientists are predicting humans will simply be giant rolling balls of masks by 2024. They'll be masked everywhere. They'll probably be in BSL level 3 suits by then. Who knows? That could be a, don't rule that out. That may well be a recommendation. So Fauci is double masked, done as another flip-flop. How many dead in the U.S.? At least 329 officially listed as dead so far from taking the experimental, I'm not going to call it a vaccine, it's an injection. Story today, 7 die at a Spanish care home. They all got the Pfizer vax, and all residents, all of them, are now testing positive for coronavirus, with 7 dead. Bill Gates warns us that we must prepare for the next pandemic. The next pandemic. What does Billy know? Like, he says, we would prepare for war. Now, what does he know? Obviously, he knows what's coming next. Okay? Fear porn. New variant has mutated again with some, quote, worrying, end quote, new genetic changes. This, scientists are reporting this in the UK. It goes on and on and on. Back with us tonight, I'm very honored to have her with us, Erica Kahn. She was on the other night with Bob Greska. We were talking about Greska's C60 and more. She is a nanoscientist, a graduate of MIT, and has a great resume. We could go on for 5 minutes with it. She's a brilliant woman and scientist and has come back tonight. We're going to talk about the actual so-called vaccine, what's in it, how it works, what it's all about, and more. Erica, welcome back. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Jeff. Good to be back again. Thank you.
Yes. Where would you like to start? I think what we let me make a suggestion. What vaccine needs to be kept at minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit, and for what? Can you give us any insight on that?
Well, that's you're speaking about the Pfizer vaccine, and
that's right.
Yes, it does need to be kept at a very, very cold temperature because it's encapsulating that delicate strand of RNA, the genetic material that's going to be injected into the vaccine recipient. So, in other words, it's these lipid nanoparticles that if they get up to room temperature, they start to melt and then the RNA degrades and the vaccine won't work. So it's got to be kept frozen. And I've heard it described as like chocolate at room temperature. You know, if it gets too warm, the thing just kind of loses its shape. So we got to keep it very, very cold so you can maintain the integrity of the RNA so that it's viable when it's injected. Now, Moderna one is based on the same concept. They're the lipid nanoparticles that they're using tend to be more stable. They don't require that deep freeze, but they do still need to be frozen for the same reason.
Understood. It's only, 150 degrees below zero or
something like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the Pfizer one requires actually special freezers to store it properly.
Yes. This issue is keyed with lipid. Nanolipid material is used to coat this mRNA virus so it stays intact and doesn't go to work, right? Now, tell us about the lipid covering. It's a fat covering. It's fatty, right? Fatty material, so to speak.
It's synthetic lipids combined with some form of polyethylene glycol, PEG, which is known to be problematic. I mean, PEG is another name for antifreeze, but it's an excipient in a number of foods, pharmaceuticals, and many people have developed allergies to this particular substance. And that being said, if they are injected with this, they are going to have an allergic response, and that probably accounts for the cases of anaphylactic shock that are occurring after injection. I mean, some to the point of being lethal. That's no joke.
Almost 400 dead now in the U.S. officially, and that's the admitted number. There are people in the professional nursing industry who say they're seeing people die all the time. It's not unusual. Older people.
Yeah,
I've
heard the stories as well. They're utterly shocking. The lipids or the PEG in these lipid nanoparticles tend to be antigenic. In other words, they provoke the immune response. Even if there was nothing inside that lipid nanoparticle, it could still induce an immune response. And sometimes,
oh, really? The package it comes in could also cause
antigenic problems. Yes.
All right. Now, the mRNA, when the virus gets loose, it changes the DNA. Apparently, in virtually every cell in your body over time, that's the theory. And tell us what happens.
No.
Please, tell us what happens.
The RNA is nothing more than the instructions for building a protein. And in this case, it's the spike protein on the exterior of the coronavirus.
What causes the DNA to change?
Well, theoretically, it shouldn't. And that's what they're telling people, that there's no risk of this getting inserted into your DNA or altering your DNA expression in any way, shape, or form. I think that's an assumption. Theoretically, that should be true, but do we know that for a fact? No.
No, we don't know anything for a fact anymore.
And theoretically, are situations where it could be integrated into the DNA. For example, if you were co-infected with a retrovirus, which, I don't know, maybe 20% of the population at any given time is harboring some retrovirus, then that piece of RNA could theoretically be inserted into your DNA and then permanently change
it. Does the mRNA that has been allegedly created to mimic and produce the spike protein, does that go into your DNA or does that just hang out in the cells? What happens?
So these lipid nanoparticles, again, let's just assume they're intact. That's another assumption. Let's just say that, this is the difference between getting a vaccine containing lipid nanoparticles and a piece of genetic material versus getting a natural infection with the actual virus, that the virus cannot infect you until it comes into contact with a receptor or cell that bears the receptor like a lock and key. So in the case of this SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus, it's looking for cells that are expressing an ACE2 receptor. And that's
how common is that in the human body?
It's
how many of our cells?
Your heart, your lungs, kidneys, liver, and
major
brain.
Organs.
Critical organs. They all express that protein to one degree or another, even the GI tract. But when you inject these lipid nanoparticles, that's like a dirty bomb. Those can go everywhere. It's nano. It can go everywhere in minutes. And one of the charts of the biodistribution studies that one of the companies did, I think it was Pfizer, they show that these lipid nanoparticles or the RNA, I'm sure they had a marker, nanomarker in there to be able to determine where these lipid nanoparticles ended up. But some of them were in the brain within 8 hours. And so, I hear repeatedly people describing, raging headaches, dizziness.
Yes, that's not uncommon. Correct.
Yeah, one complaint other than
cerebral
the
manifestations of trouble already. Yeah, right away.
Yeah, and so clearly these things are getting into the brain. It's known in nanotechnology that lipid nanoparticles have a high affinity for the brain. They're very attractive candidates for delivering any type of pharmaceutical into the brain.
And right through the blood-brain barrier. No problem.
Right. Yeah. That's the strength of nano, the power of nano.
I assume I'm correct here, but the nanolipid particles are encapsulating, if that's the correct scientific term, the mRNA viral strand, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So those nano, and remember I always said from the very beginning, this is not a vaccine, it's a carrier for nano. And
yeah.
Moderna even said it's an OS, it's an operating system. What does that tell you? It's not a vaccine in the traditional sense at all. So it goes into your body.
No, it's hijacking your cellular machinery. It's like a virus, a synthetic virus, really. It's a transfection agent.
Got
so
it.
It's so, delivering genetic material into your cell, and your cell is going to read that genetic sequence.
Will it adopt it? Erica, will it adopt that genetic material and incorporate it into its own in the cell? That was what I was getting at earlier about changing your DNA. Is it altering your DNA at the cellular level?
We don't know. Theoretically, it should not be. But we don't know that. It's an assumption.
It could be under certain circumstances.
Yeah, we're taking a leap of faith here with these people who have lied to us repeatedly from day one.
Yeah.
You'd have to be crazy to roll your sleeve up for this thing.
Well, that's a quote I can live with, and I try to tell people, and it's sad. I met a worker today who came out here to do some special work, just a little bit, and I talked to him, and I said, you know, please don't take this alleged vaccine, this injection. And he's not dumb, but he's a captive of the mainstream media, television, screen addiction matrix. He thinks it's fine. He said, these people just don't think their government has anything ill in store for them. When in point of fact, the government, by extension of those who are controlling the government, couldn't care less about human life. We're just digits in a computer. It doesn't matter to them. Now, let me go back to the lipid thing. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
The lipid issue. The brain, lipids are, can I say a fatty type of thing?
Yes.
Lipid, okay.
Yeah.
The brain is largely fat, is it not? Or fatty type tissue?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so there's a real affinity there. And that's what I wanted to get to. When you get this injected into you, those nanolipid particles with that mRNA virus in them, which is going to instruct your cell to create that spike protein, so your immune system says, oh my God, there's a vote, we got to go get this. Trouble is, everywhere your immune system looks, in some cases, there's that spike protein.
Well, yeah, so, you know, I don't know, maybe those lipid nanoparticles with the RNA end up in your big toe. You know, it's nano. It can go anywhere.
And does. And
how dense
are these lipid nanoparticles in a vaccine dose? Do we have any idea? Probably not.
That's a good question. I don't know what the parts per million are in a dose.
Mm-hmm. And they're not talking.
They're not being very transparent.
And the other side of that coin is, what other kinds of mRNA viruses or nanobots or nanotech could be put inside these nanolipid coverings? We don't know. We have no idea what they're putting in us. We really don't. When Moderna says, it took us 2 days to create this vaccine, and Pfizer, not to be outdone, said, well, we did it in about 2 hours. I've got the stories. I have the stories. Not 9 years, 2 days and 2 hours.
They've been prepping for this. You know they've been prepping for this. They were just waiting for the green light.
Yeah. For years. The nano field, and it's such a pleasure to have somebody on who is a nano scientist. The nano field, just for fun, and let's just keep it generic, is how much further down the road than the average person would even think about. 10 years,
crazy.
Depending on the discipline. But nanotech is, in my view, is the number one military-industrial complex area that all the money, the black ops money, and all the rest of the money is going to. It's all now about bioweapons, bioavailability, nanotechnology. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the predictions are for the next 10 years, the biggest sector of the economy is going to be the biotech industry, because they've now developed this ability to manipulate human beings with this type of technology. And, you know, nowhere has it, or at no previous time has it been so obvious that our health is not only being manipulated and exploited, but also commoditized. I mean, it's like we're just cattle.
Weaponized.
But just exploited for profit.
Totally.
You know, you unleash a virus on a population, and, well, you know, within a month, here's Bill Gates with a solution. We need a vaccine.
Yeah, well, Billy had it before. Look, this has all been programmed and set up and rehearsed. It's a screenplay. They're laying it out now. How many different viruses could be, this is a rhetorical question, how many different viruses could be created, tweaked, earmarked, genetically manipulated, and turned loose on the public? As many as you could possibly imagine. That's the potential here. I was reading stories in the late 70s that on the shelf back then, Erica, you probably know all about this, were two life-ending elements. That one was created in a lab at a university in the western U.S., and the other one, I believe, was in a lab in New Zealand. One was a bacteria, and the other was a fungus. And those two things, they weren't necessarily nano, if they were to be turned loose, would wipe out all life on the planet. And they were obviously kept away. I read this in the late 70s.
Wow.
And this goes way back. All right, now, when people get this vaccine, where do these nanolipids with their cargo of mRNA go beside everywhere? Did they particularly like the brain because it is lipid in its primary constitution? Or could these things be targeted to the brain or the heart or the kidneys, liver, etc.? Could they be targeted?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty indiscriminate. You know, like I said, a dirty bomb. You know, wherever they go, they go. Wherever the circulation takes them. You know, maybe if you have a very robust immune system, you can sequester them and they don't go as far or do as much damage.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just, you know, starting out and you know, we're the guinea pigs.
Oh, they're watching everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hold on a minute, Eric. I've got to pause. We're talking with Erica Kahn about these nano. I told you in the beginning, I said there's nano here. It's nanolipid, little colored envelope, and inside is the mRNA viral strand, which is going to manufacture using your body, your body's bioelectric potential, your body's whatever it needs to make the proteins that these spike units on the outside of the virus have, and your immune system targets those for destruction. And that 56-year-old doctor in Miami was dead 16 days or 17 days after taking that Pfizer vax, and they claim that his internal organs were virtually mush, and they couldn't find one platelet in his remaining blood. And he was in perfect health 16 days earlier. That's a incredible reaction to this. Hold on a minute. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. What we're trying to do in this hour for you newcomers is to help you understand. You've got to do some serious thinking about this before you even dream of getting this injection. I shouldn't call it a vaccine because it's not. There's a little clip I want to play here. Laura Ingraham had a doctor on, Dr. Sukarit Bakdi. He's a retired microbiologist, co-author of a new book. And I want you to listen to this because it's almost amusing the way she was told in her earpiece, cut him off, cut him off. I couldn't hear it, but I know that's what they were doing because she cut him off. Take a listen.
That's a simple question. Is COVID panic worse than the disease? The controversial co-author of this book, Corona False Alarm Facts and Figures, joins us now, award-winning researcher, retired microbiologist, Dr. Sukarit Bakdi. Doctor, thank you for getting up early for all of us, for all these policies, lockdowns, social distancing. Which, in your view, has been the most injurious to the...
Now, this is the funny part. An interviewer hates short answers. This guy's short answers, Laura Ingraham, because that's all he needs to say. It's the truth, and it's quite amusing in a way and scary in another way.
And not suited to the science.
The looming vaccination.
The vaccination, right. On the issue of the vaccination, we'll get to that in a moment, but on the social distancing and the masks, just focusing on that for a moment, which of those two in your research and your work has been the most displaced?
Both.
Both have. Not at all backed up by the science.
Zero science.
So why are they pushing this if zero science? I mean, they'll show videos of people coughing through masks and without masks, and it's terrifying people here in the country.
This is something that we And when I say we, it's hundreds and thousands of people are standing up to say, please, all of you, sit down and think about this, read up on this, and then make up your own mind. Don't believe things that people are telling you. Think for yourself and come to your own conclusions. That is why we wrote this book, because all the arguments saying, telling you why what you are doing is absolutely nonsense is in that book. And there's no question that is left open to you. All you have to do is go and read and think.
And doctor, on the issue of the vaccine, tonight Anthony Fauci on this network actually said that 75% of Americans are going to have to get vaccinated to reach what they call herd immunity. Do you buy that?
What utter nonsense. I know that Dr. Fauci is a renowned
immunologist,
medical scientist and immunologist, but what he says has to be wrong. And this is also what we have taken great lengths to explain in the book. And why, you know, someone who says this has not the slightest inkling of the basics of immunology. And this is very, very surprising for someone of Dr. Fauci's standing. And I would dare to defy him anywhere in the world at any time. But I cannot do this in 2 minutes.
Well, so you believe that the COVID vaccine is not necessary?
I think it's downright dangerous. And I warn you, if you go along these lines, you are going to go to your doom.
I think he made himself very clear. Don't mess with the vaccine. It's not a vaccine. And he was rather appalled at some of Dr. Fauci's behaviors. Erica, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, okay, so we discussed the pervasiveness of delivering this genetic material to, you know, indiscriminately to any organ or tissue of the body by virtue of these lipid nanoparticles. It just,
yeah,
you know, they go everywhere without, you know, differentiating. There's another issue here. I mean, there's many issues with this vaccine, but probably one of the most concerning is the spike protein itself. The spike protein on the coronavirus, to which you're asking your body to, you know, replicate by being transfected with this genetic sequence. Now, the issue with the spike protein is that it might be the most problematic part of the virus. It might be the part of the virus that's responsible for all these nasty clinical symptoms that people present with when they are truly infected. It's known, I mean, for 20 years they've been trying to come up with a vaccine against coronavirus, and it hasn't worked in animals. All of the animal models, what they do is they give them a traditional vaccine where, you know, you inject the antigen and create an antibody response, and it looks good initially. You get lots of antibodies, and it looks like they're protected against future infection, but it actually has a paradoxical effect in that a future real-life exposure makes the disease worse and many times lethal. So,
well, that goes along, does it not, with the fact that many people, once they've received the injection, almost immediately test positive if you can get a good test?
Well, I think there's some theories on how or why that might be happening, but let me just finish with that spike protein.
Sure.
This is almost begging for some kind of autoimmune condition. The reason is that spike protein contains epitopes, which are genetic sequences that can provoke an immune response. several of which, 20-something of which, the vast majority of which are also homologous, meaning identical, to proteins that are found in the human body. And so once you've sensitized your immune system to recognize these genetic sequences to that spike protein, your body's also going to be recognizing those same sequences in your own tissues, and many of which are in the, you know, some portion of the immune system. So it's thought that possibly, you know, the really adverse events in SARS and also following vaccination might be just a horrendous autoimmune response.
A deadly
response. Completely dysregulated. You know, you get the cytokine storm, which just cascades into more and more, you know, problems, and eventually you wind up with sepsis and die. So you're actually asking your cells to produce a problematic protein that, even if you survive the vaccine, you're likely going to have some kind of autoimmune condition to deal with down the line.
For the rest of your life,
It's very difficult to turn that off.
How do you unteach your immune system? How do you unteach your immune system and get it to stop attacking this spike protein? You can't. Not that I know of. I've never heard of anything like that.
Maybe, you know, corticosteroids, maybe low-dose naltrexone, maybe plasmapheresis. It's tricky. It's they'll have another wave of people that, you know, they can exploit and profit from just from this vaccine, the suffering that's going to come from this vaccine. It's crazy.
Well, I think that's a proper word to ascribe to all of this. It is crazy. And now they're talking about this Candida auris, the next pandemic. This is what the story says. Next pandemic, serious global health threat. That's a quote. The CDC is warning about drug-resistant Candida auris, the fungus, as fears of the next pandemic loom. Now, this is being spun out on top of the ever-mutating coronavirus, right? So, I mean, you've got these people who are pushing this crap out constantly, and yet the statistics are enough to really catch the attention of anybody. They should be. 329 officially recorded dead in the U.S. Their immune systems obviously turned on them. It just destroyed them. That's what happens. Here's a story from England. Remember the English variant that they have now, the new mutation? The English strain. They're calling it the Kent strain. The new mutation of Kent COVID-19 variant is said to help the virus evade the immune system. This is the story. Now, here's another one. More people are dying from COVID-19 in the UK right now than they did during the first wave. It's nonstop. It's
The British press is just brutal. The fear mongering that they're doing and the shaming and just the hype. It's almost laughable.
It is. It's tragically laughable. Nonstop. So now we've got this new potential second pandemic, Candida auris fungus. It's not a vaccine related issue in terms of being a virus. Remember, it's different. This is different. Mm-hmm. It's a fungus. Candida fungus, by the way, is found in every human body. This particular strain of it, the auris strain, is apparently not common. But Candida, everybody has Candida at all times. Sometimes it gets out of balance and you end up with a white-coated tongue and you don't feel good. Your digestive tract is messed up. And there are medications that you can take to stabilize it. By the way, Rife instruments will stop Candida infestations and bring it back into balance right away. That's a fact. I know. I used to have it. Okay. So let's just go. We've got the social distancing, which is ridiculous. The face mask issue, which continues to be volleyballed back and forth in the faces of the masses. They don't know what the hell to believe. I see people out there, and so do you, I'm sure, Erica, who are afraid. They're just they steer away from other people. I watch them. They don't get near anybody else. They're afraid. They're wearing their masks in their cars. You've seen them outdoors too. Tell us what you've seen.
Okay. Well, the most shocking, you know, aside from seeing people drive with them in their cars and hearing about people actually sleeping with them on, I've been on, mountain trails in the wilderness, and, you know, somebody will be approaching from the opposite direction, and they will give you a wide berth and, pull some fabric up over their nose and mouth, and, and we're outdoors.
Oh, my. See, and there's just no reason for any of it. Even World Health Organization admitted, or maybe it was the NHS in England, that 80% of those who died, allegedly, from coronavirus, allegedly, would have been saved if they had only taken vitamin D3. Now, that was a hell of an admission, which came and went, and nobody paid any attention to it. They literally gave out a remedy for the coronavirus infection, but nobody paid attention. There are so many things that people can do. Go ahead.
Many things have come to light that appear to be effective, maybe very effective, and they all get squashed.
Right.
I mean, there is deliberate suppression of helpful information, and that's when you know there's something going on.
The gravity of this sink in, do you think, with people who get it, at least to a degree? This is really not going to get better. That's my point. It's going to get worse. They're planning on a second pandemic. There's no doubt about it. I was told about this almost 2 years ago, that there would be not one, there would be two.
Yeah.
I was told this. And they're going to do whatever it takes to get the sheep to comply. Keep your heads down, keep eating, don't look up. Just follow directions and we'll protect you. That's the message of big government. And it doesn't work because they're setting you up to die in the first place. It's bizarre.
They have some self-serving plan and, they don't want to be challenged on it. I mean, that one of the most stark examples of the deliberate suppression and I don't know, just willfulness of their agenda was that Great Barrington Declaration that
Please tell our listeners what that was again. Some know, but some don't. And it's very important. This was a huge deal.
Yeah, this was a declaration. Numerous health officials from across the globe, independent, not government shills, came together and drew up this declaration that, described how the pandemic was being mishandled and this is not the way it should be dealt with, if we have our fellow human beings' best interest at heart. And, we're resolved not to perpetuate it. We want to do the right thing, and we want to have access to the therapies that we know are working and, to that effect. I think it also addressed the inflated numbers, with the cases and the tests.
How
to date, it's still there. It has been signed. Concerned citizens, 40,000 medical practitioners. I mean, clinicians, people hands-on, frontline clinicians, and something like 14,000 just credentialed scientists, epidemiologists, whatever. And it is patently ignored.
It's like it never happened. The Great Barrington Declaration. Earth-shaking event. Swept under the carpet and gone.
It was a consensus of just, close to a million, people that just, they see what's going on. They're not in agreement with it. They want it to be, they want it to be handled appropriately, and it's not. It's just, there's clearly an agenda, and
it's been geopolitically, economically weaponized, the whole thing. That was the operation as planned years ago. And what I want to know is how Moderna and Pfizer, within 2 days, allegedly, by their own statements, could come up with isolating the mRNA, right, the viral strand, and coding it in nanolipid technology. How could they do that in 2 days? As a scientist, is that easy to do? Is that simple?
Well,
or might
you know,
they have
now
done this before?
If they have the genetic sequence and they claim that China gave them the genetic sequence in January or something and they got right to work, you know, producing the vaccine or the, you know, genetic sequence for the vaccine. I mean, that's easy to do now. You can make all kinds of genetic sequences. I mean, you can make a totally synthetic virus if you want. Designer virus. The only difficulty is getting it to, you know, transfect a cell. But it's scary what they can do now. And I just want to add that, okay, these are the first two vaccines that we have available in this country. Johnson & Johnson's coming out soon. Mm-hmm. Theirs is based on a vector virus, and they're using an adenovirus, which is typically not a very virulent virus for human beings, and they've genetically modified it to contain the instructions for producing the spike protein of the coronavirus. They say that the adenovirus will not replicate. They've taken out the gene so that the adenovirus itself with that spike protein genetic material cannot replicate. I don't know if you want to believe them, but...
So they spayed and neutered this thing. So it can't replicate. I get it.
So they say.
Uh-huh.
So they say. And the only genetic material in there is the genetic material to produce the spike protein. Now, theirs uses DNA. So theirs is designed to interact with your DNA.
Wow.
Before it produces that spike protein. I mean, another, you know, where are we going with this?
Yeah. The only company that's shown any, I guess you could say, morality, medical, scientific morality, is Merck. They've got out. They announced they quit. They quit the sweepstakes, and they're going back, I guess, just looking for direct pharmaceutical applications to quash the virus. That's
they've got two candidates that they've been looking at for therapeutics.
Well, this whole thing is, as I said, I'm afraid, and I don't know all the answers, but every indicator seems to point to that this is not going to go away anytime soon. Not until they get what they want and arrive at the destination that they have planned out well in advance. And that may well be to keep this running until they reduce the population to the level that they want. I'm sorry to say that, but the indications are these people have no mercy, no morality. They don't care.
I think this whole vaccine thing, virus vaccine thing, is serving two purposes. Number one, you know, when did it become acceptable just to skip animal studies and go right to humans? You know, for a virus with a case fatality rate of less than 1%. I mean,
right. Especially with mRNA, which has never been used in people before, ever.
Right.
No.
There's a company in Pennsylvania, Inovio, that's coming out with a patch, needle-like patch, that contains the DNA. It's called plasmid DNA, which can cause your cells to produce the spike protein. But that, so you put the patch on, and then you have to zap it with something they call a Selectra. It delivers a electromagnetic or electrical pulse so that your cells open up, you know, when it's
oh
pulsed
my.
and accept that DNA.
Oh, no. And that DNA takes up residence in your cells. So you're genetically, you're a GMO. You're changed.
Yes, you've been transfected.
Wow.
And I mean, so they say that, you know, you're going to produce the spike protein, but they could insert any RNA or DNA to produce whatever protein they want.
I still don't understand. Some people are generating an immediately negative response to this injection. Some people are dying. We saw that poor 30-year-old nurse just collapse on live video online. She died. They tried to cover it up. She's dead. She was one of the first graphic examples. They're killing people. And when you put something in the human body that instructs the cells and forces the cells in your body to create this protein, which your immune system will go after and try to destroy, where does your body draw the line? Oh, that's enough cells that have that instruction now. We're going to tell them to stop. So just so many cells are going to produce the protein so we don't overdo it. No, it goes crazy in some people. And I think it's designed to do that in some people, to absolutely infect them, transfect them. Is that it? Transfect?
Yep, transfect.
Transfect. I think that when you have a body that most of the cells are producing this protein, your immune system, if it's robust, will cause you no end of grief. It'll kill you over time.
Mm-hmm.
That apparently is what's going on. Am I right?
That's part of it. I think the immediate reactions are probably anaphylaxis, probably to the polyethylene glycol and the lipid nanoparticles.
Yes.
But here's the thing. You can have all those responses, inflammation, coagulation, just from having extracellular RNA, or just nanoparticles.
Nanoparticles,
I mean, this is the danger of nano. I mean, you know, you can use it for good or for bad, but just having these nanoparticles infiltrate your body, foreign material infiltrating your body, you're going to confuse the hell out of your immune system.
Well, I go back to that doctor in Miami whose insides were just destroyed by his own immune
mm-hmm.
system. This is a horrible, horrible way to go.
It is. It really is.
I wish I had some positive things to say. I just urge all of you, stay away. Don't do it. Last thing I want to get into, I need to take a couple minutes. China, apparently, I've got two reports on this. One was audio, one was, I read it. China wants to stop anyone who's had the Pfizer or Moderna injection from coming into China. Why would they do that? Is that suggestive that somebody who has received that injection could be shedding things from that injection, or as a result of the immunological response to the proteins, and somehow that goes hand in hand with the idea of, oh, we only need to vaccinate 75% of the population. Why? Why do they say that? Are we saying that the 75% then will effectively transmit some kind of, quote, immunity to the other 25%, thereby vaccinating everyone? What's going on with that? Any thoughts?
I don't know. If we believe what they say, you know, there should be no risk of, you know, becoming infected with just this RNA. I don't know.
See, but there's a reason they don't want people in there. If that story is true,
yeah.
And I can't vet it, I can't validate it, but it seemed correct to me.
Well, you know
that's
what?
One thing.
I think some of these cases where people are testing positive for COVID after they've gotten the vaccine, and along with some of the other symptoms that people are complaining about, one is that, you know, extreme lethargy, strange eczema-like rashes on their body. Gosh, there was something else. But these are suggestive of T cell depletion. And it's similar to when people initially get infected with an AIDS virus. They have a drop in their T cell count because, you know, the T cells are infected. So your immunity is lowered because your T cells are busy or compromised. And then you become susceptible to these other, you know, I mean, there's viruses everywhere. There's bacteria everywhere. So there's a temporary drop in immunity, and if this SARS-CoV-2 virus is in the environment, and now these people don't have T cells to deal with it, now they get infected.
Two
quick
things.
T cells are all tied up with these nanoparticles.
That's right. Number one, anybody with an autoimmune issue, like plaque psoriasis or whatever, any kind of an autoimmune thing, should never go near this vaccine. Never. Correct?
I would agree. You're just asking for trouble.
Oh, you're begging for it. Number two, any truth to the story that there allegedly are some HIV genetic material, there is some HIV genetic material in this SARS-CoV-2, which I always called SARS 2.0, virus. Have you heard? You've heard about that. What do you know about that?
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, there's two issues. Number one, there seemed to be evidence of the GP41, which is the envelope protein on the HIV. From what I hear, they think that came in as a contaminant and not intentionally. I mean, there's really no need to put it in there, but it's there.
Good excuse.
It might have had to do with the cell culture that it was grown in. But then there's another issue where, when they were working with adenoviruses as a vaccine vector for HIV vaccines, they found out that these adenoviruses, the way the T cells responded to being transfected with HIV through an adenovirus, actually made them more susceptible to getting HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to do with the immune dysregulation. You know, you tie up your T cells with one virus and...
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think we just ran over. We did. Thanks to Erica Khan, and we'll be right back. Hold on.